From the studios of Kootenai Co-op Radio, this is Deconstructing Dinner.
And welcome to Deconstructing Dinner, a syndicated weekly one-hour radio show and podcast produced at Kootenai Co-op Radio, CJLY in Nelson, BC. My name is John Steinman, and I'll be your host for the next hour. We have an exciting show lined up for you today, with the first half of the episode featuring the long-awaited final leg of the Cross Canada Deconstructing Dinner Tour. For any of you who listen frequently to the show, you've likely become quite familiar with Ontario's Derek Hahn and Sanisha Gergich, two devoted fans of the show who, on May 7th, embarked across Canada on recumbent tricycles and used their trip to spread the word about Deconstructing Dinner. Well, on July 24th, Derek and Sanisha arrived at their final destination of St. John's, Newfoundland, with many more stories to tell. Last we heard from the cyclists, they were at the Quebec border. And so on today's broadcast, we hear about their route between Quebec and the Maritime Provinces. And into the second half of the show, we will feature a unique segment from Port Dover, Ontario's Fred Eaglesmith. Fred is a longtime bluegrass musician who has developed a cult following around the world and who conveniently passed through Nelson in July of this year while on tour. With a long history in farming, Fred's lyrics capture many of the issues raised on Deconstructing Dinner each week, in particular the plight of the Canadian farmer. I had a chance to sit down with Fred in the studios of Kootenai Co-op Radio, where he shared his thoughts on the current state of agriculture and food, and you can expect an exclusive live recording of one of his most moving songs, John Deere. If you do miss any of today's show, it will be archived on our website at deconstructingdinner.ca. Over 100 of our episodes are archived there, with a wealth of additional links to information on the many topics covered each week. And we also from time to time like to remind you as our listeners that this radio project relies on the financial support from listeners, and our website is the best place where financial support for this weekly broadcast can be donated. Either one-time donations or monthly subscription options are available, and it can't be stressed enough how important listener support is to keep this show on the air, and every amount helps. And you can also help support this program by purchasing a CD, which is made available on the main page of our website along the right-hand column of the page. Now, what has also been an ongoing presence on the website since May of this year has been a link to the Cross Canada Trike Tour page, where updates and information on the two Deconstructing Dinner cyclists is located. On May 7th, Derek Hahn and Sanisha Gergich departed mile zero of the Trans-Canada Highway and used their trip to promote this radio program. Both of them are avid listeners and supporters of the show, and with Deconstructing Dinner signs affixed to their unique and attention-grabbing recumbent trikes, the cyclists have stayed with farmers, hunted out local food, spoken with media, and shared many stories through their online blog, linked to from our website. The two cyclists have since returned to southern Ontario, where they both call home, but last we heard from them, they had only just left Ottawa. Upon entering into Quebec, the two cyclists were greeted with a much more friendly route to travel than found in other provinces, because as it appears, the entire province of Quebec is connected with what is called the Green Route. They're a set of paved or well-kept paths designed for cyclists wishing to stay off the dangerous roads. After many close calls and frustrating road conditions, the path was a sigh of relief, and so too was the culture. Derek Hahn quickly recognized that there is a lot the rest of Canada could learn from Quebec with respect to food, farming, and optimal well-being. Derek believes that the language barrier between Quebec and the rest of Canada has prevented many inspiring examples of more responsible and engaged living from reaching the rest of us. Derek spoke to me over the phone from their final destination of St. John's, Newfoundland.
One problem being with the language barrier, we fail to appreciate a lot of the things that are going on in Quebec because I think we're dealing with a really progressive province, and I think there's a lot that we could be learning from them. With that said, though, one of our hosts in Gatineau, we had someone put us up for the night, and they explained to us that they have some CSAs and box programs that are going on, and there's a lot of youths. Young people, just out of university or in university, along that age, 20, 30-somethings, that are all really interested in getting back to a simpler lifestyle and getting away from all this industrialized processes that seems to have dominated our food supply as of late. You can see that side, but you can also see the side where, the old school or the old way of thought is a lot more common here as well. When I'm biking down the road, Yeah, on any given day, you can see a fruit and vegetable stand. You can probably see about five of them on the side of the road. Unfortunately, right now, the only things that are really in season are hothouse tomatoes, some cucumbers, and mainly strawberries is all that I've seen so far, maybe some onions. You see a lot of cheeseries. So there's a lot of farmers that are creating their own cheese. And in fact, we our first guests explained to us that there was a time not so long ago where I believe it was the provincial government was looking at phasing in mandatory pasteurization for cheese products. And that met a lot of resistance in the community because a lot of people were like, why are you doing this? Why do you think it's going to make our food safer when, you know, this is the way we've been doing it for hundreds of years and, you know, Europe still does the same thing? It didn't last too long. I don't think it was ever regulated or put into regulation.
As the two cyclists made their way through Quebec, they arrived in the town of Montmagny, where a slight detour took them to an inspiring example of urban agriculture.
Yeah, there's one thing I just saw yesterday. I went through the town of Montmagny. I just stumbled across it by accident, but I was I hopped on one of the town's bike paths, and I went through this little area, and I found the most beautifully well-kept vegetable garden that I've seen. And I had to assume that it was some sort of a community initiative that was going on. And the land that it covered was at least 1 acre of just vegetables and some flowers and whatnot to add some color. So in my limited French that I do know, I asked one of the cyclists that came by and asked him if that was indeed a community garden. And he said, yeah, it was. While I was there, there were some people in there gardening, weeding, and taking care of things. And for me, just to see that kind of thing and to see it at the scale that I saw it is something, one, I've never seen before, but two, with all the municipalities in the country that have this open land, you know, like, what are they doing? Right now, they're probably spending money putting down some pesticides to keep the weeds under control and or are mowing it. And you know what, if you just had a couple people that were interested in doing some gardening and start something up, you'd be able to turn that into some more usable land and more productive land and less expensive for the municipality to maintain.
During our last installment of Deconstructing Dinner, the topic of strawberries came up, and it did yet again during my most recent conversation with Derek. Derek and Sunisha made a substantial effort to eat as locally as possible while crossing the country. And if the foods that were available to them are any indication of what foods should be representative of Canadian cuisine, well, strawberries should be one of them. Even though most Canadian grocery stores never carry any Canadian strawberries, they were one of the only foods that the cyclists could consistently rely upon while traveling through the rural areas of central and eastern Canada. And you could say that Derek and Sunisha were literally fueled by strawberries.
I'd say right up till we started heading south to New Brunswick, well, especially along the St. Lawrence Seaway, there was strawberry stands every couple kilometers. But, yeah, we totally took advantage of that. Usually, we try to get them later on in the day so we didn't have to lug them around and bounce them around too much. I would say average, we were buying strawberries once every 2 days or so.
Following their time spent in Quebec, Derek and Sunisha descended into the northeastern corner of New Brunswick, where they soon after arrived in the city of Bathurst. It was there that the two received what likely amounts to the most extensive media coverage to date on their trip after being interviewed on CBC Radio. The interview happened so quickly that they forgot to ask when and where the segment was going to air. But when they arrived in the town of Shediac, they learned that the segment aired throughout all of the Maritime provinces. And here's Sunisha Gergich.
I didn't know what day or what time it was going to air. We kind of either forgot to ask that or just kind of overlooked it at the time. But I guess it did air right the next day. And we found that out when we were in Shediac after our meal. I stepped outside of the restaurant for a second and met a gentleman who kind of recognized me right away because our trike was nearby, and he kind of put two and two together and kind of addressed us as a celebrity, which was kind of funny. Basically, he came up to me and said, you must be the celebrities that are biking across Canada.
From mud flats to mud tires, it's a dream Derek Han and Sunisha Gergich have been working on for years. This summer, they finally made it happen. The two men from Ontario are cycling across the country, from Victoria, BC to St. John's, Newfoundland, and they're doing it to raise awareness about food issues. They're also promoting a syndicated radio program called Deconstructing Dinner. The pair started their journey on the West Coast in May, and they were in Bathurst earlier this week. That's where they spoke with CBC reporter Alison Northcott.
My name is Sinisha Gergic, from London, Ontario. And, well, this is our big trip. We've been planning for a couple of years.
My name is Derek Hahn. I'm from a little town called Moncton, Ontario. I am a millwright by trade and passionate about food issues.
Can you describe these interesting-looking bicycles for me?
They're called recumbent trikes. Basically, it's the same idea as a bicycle with an extra wheel, same parts as a regular bike would have, but a lot more ergonomic. They travel about the same speed as a bike, and it's just as hard to push them up the hill as it is a bike. So,
yeah, to create a little visual for listeners, we have two wheels located on the front of the trike and one wheel at the back, which increases stability. And if you could picture yourself sitting on your lazy boy with your feet out in front of you, where your feet are about where the pedals are.
And let's have a look at this load. Which one of these is yours, Derek?
This one, the first one here, is mine.
Okay. And can you describe for me what you've got on the back here?
Well, I'm carrying two pannier bags and then a bunch of kayaking bags. They all contain my tent, my sleeping bag, my clothes, food for a couple of days. I carry a laptop for my online blog and tools for the bike. That's pretty much it. This is our moving house for the time being. I also keep a solar charger to recharge batteries for our lights and stuff like that if we need them.
So can you tell me a little bit about what it is you guys are doing?
Yeah, we're raising awareness, essentially. When we started this trip, I talked to lots of people, and they're like, oh, you should do it for a cause. You should do it for, you know, cancer or something like that. And I agree that those kind of issues are really important, and raising money and funds for these research and betterment of humanity is important. But one thing that has always struck me is what about the causes of these diseases? And are we looking closely enough at what might be causing them? We're promoting a radio show about food issues. It's called Deconstructing Dinner. You can find it on www.deconstructingdinner.ca. This show discusses exactly that. Where does food come from? What energy was used to get that from the field to your table? Was there chemicals, pesticides, fertilizers put onto them? And what is the better way or a better way to get our food? And more importantly, let's think about a less industrialized food model. Food isn't a product. It's something we grow. It's something that is inherent to our survival. And we should be thinking about it a little more in depth than what's convenient, what's quick and easy, what can we pop into our microwave for 5 minutes so then we can carry on with our hectic lives. We should stop and appreciate it a little bit longer.
Well, speaking of stopping and appreciating, I think that you guys have some pancakes waiting for you inside.
We certainly do.
Do you mind chatting with me a little bit more while you enjoy those pancakes?
And this is Deconstructing Dinner. A full recording of that CBC interview with Deconstructing Dinner cyclists Derek Hahn and Sinisha Gergic will be linked to from the website for Deconstructing Dinner at deconstructingdinner.ca. With such great exposure found through that CBC segment, the two cyclists did encounter other residents of communities who did too hear about them on the radio. Now, one of the highlights of the trip in New Brunswick for Derek and Sinisha was their stop in Shediac. Having grown up in a landlocked province, the two had never before indulged in lobster. And as luck would have it, Shediac refers to itself as the lobster capital of the world.
Yeah, as we kind of rolled into town, it's you can see that it is really a touristy location right off the bat. First of all, there's a huge statue of a lobster, and a bunch of tourists gathered around taking pictures and things of that. And as we drove through, there's just a lot of nice little restaurants. The restaurant that we stopped in was really, really nice. We figured we'd treat ourselves to some lobster, since neither one of us ever had a full lobster. So we ordered that, and then we had a bit of a struggling fest with with the lobster. But it was delicious nonetheless, yeah.
From the province of New Brunswick, the cyclists made their way to the Confederation Bridge, where they boarded a shuttle and made their way across to Prince Edward Island. It was there in the capital of Charlottetown that the two visited the city's Saturday market, and they received a pretty warm welcome. A number of vendors donated food to them because of the goal of their trip. And it was also there at the market that the province's main newspaper, The Guardian, interviewed them while they loaded up on local foods. The article featured a photo of them showing off their local tomatoes, cucumbers, breads, and cheeses, all of which was later washed down with local PEI wine.
It wasn't necessarily that big. I'd say it's about an average market for most of the cities that we've been through. So it's not anything like I'm used to. We used to go always to a St. Jacob's market, which is north of Kitchener-Waterloo in Ontario, where we both lived for a while. This market was not nearly to that scale, but it was a very nice market anyway. It was all indoors for most part. There's a few vans and vendors outside, but we received some greens as a gift from people that found out what we were doing, and they're really impressed by that, and they kind of showed that by donating some of their local greens to us, which was great.
After departing PEI, Derek and Sunisha took the ferry across to Pictou, Nova Scotia, and spent the night in the town of Anaganish. And as they made their way across the northeastern part of the province, their mission to eat locally became rather difficult, as they were amazed at how dominated the landscape was with fast food chains. Here's Derek Hahn.
Yeah, you know what I noticed the most there, and even in Anaganish as well, is the amount of like fast food establishments. They like dominate the landscape. I saw less mom and pop restaurants or even organic, you know, local focused restaurants, and saw many food chains, especially in Anaganish. Like, it seemed like our selections were limited. I don't know if it has to do with the landscape and minimal farming or what. I think there's a motive there to get local, but it's definitely in an earlier stage than other parts of the country.
And this is Deconstructing Dinner, where we're listening to segments from my interview with Deconstructing Dinner cyclists Derek Hahn and Sunisha Gergich. The two completed their cross-Canada Deconstructing Dinner tour on July 28th, and they spoke to me over the phone from St. John's, Newfoundland. And stay tuned for the second half of the show, when we'll meet with Ontario bluegrass musician and Juno Award winner Fred Eaglesmith, who I sat down with here in the studios of Kootenai Co-op Radio, to learn more about his farming-conscious lyrics. We'll also hear an exclusive recording of a solo performance of his tune, John Deere, recorded live here in our studios. And back to the two cross-Canada cyclists, just before they hopped on to the ferry to their final destination of Newfoundland, the two did meet a fan of the show while they ate at a restaurant in the city of Sydney. The fan approached them after noticing the signs affixed to their trikes. And it was a promising sign that this show is indeed making its way across the country through the internet, because there are no stations on Cape Breton Island that we know of that air the show. And shortly after arriving in Newfoundland, the cyclists embarked on their final stretch into the capital of St. John's. As Derek put it to me over the phone, the landscape of that last leg was symbolic of their entire trip across the country. And as fate would have it, they stumbled across a patch of wild strawberries en route.
I think it turned out to be a six or seven hour ride, but you know what? It was a perfect cap to the whole trip. Newfoundland served to act as a review of the country. When we first got up in the morning and we were still on the west coast of the island in Argentia, and we went down into Placentia for breakfast, and it's just so beautiful because it's right down on the water and you can see the boats and like it's like a fishing community. Then you would climb up some steep hills, and we got into areas that, like, you know, were hilly, treed. Reminded me of BC in the interior. We had a section of land there that just looked like Northern Ontario, where we were going up and down, and everywhere we could see on the landscape was dotted with little lakes and, or what they call like ponds. So I think they're a little more shallow than a regular lake in Ontario. You go to the highest points on the way into St. John's, and you see where the glaciers have deposited large boulders. Just stunning, and seeing the pristine views. Sunisha and I both went and stopped at one pond and had a swim. We found a whole bunch of wild strawberries, so we took some time to pick some wild strawberries. And then when we finally did make it into town, it was all good. We had people honking all over the place. We found Mile Zero, and you know, now we're just kind of celebrating and soaking in everything.
One of the highlights of their time in St. John's was their celebratory meal at one of the city's finer restaurants. Known as Bianca's, the restaurant was generous enough to donate a meal to Derek and Sunisha in honor of their efforts going across the country. Bianca's menu and philosophy was a fitting cap to a trip focused on local flavors and local foods, because that's exactly what the restaurant strives to offer its customers.
Oh, that was a wonderful experience there. We showed up to Bianca's. It was a very nice one, atmosphere restaurant. Like, the interior's got some old brick on the wall with some art, and then on top of that, we just had some great service, some real positive servers, and the hostess came by and shared with us the history of Nova Scotia, or Newfoundland, not Nova Scotia. The meal itself was just amazing. Sunisha had some crab cakes. Well, we both resolved ourselves to have an Atlantic-based meal. And like I said, he had the crab cakes, and then I had some scallops, finally. So got to taste some of those since I'd never had them, and they were just the most delicious things. Like, literally, the first bite I had that, or had of those scallops, took me back to the first my first strawberry of the season, and it was the exact same feeling I had, just pure delight. And then we both had a halibut with real fresh, springy, organic greens with a delicious sauce.
And that was Derek Hahn speaking about their celebratory meal at Bianca's in St. John's, Newfoundland. And more information on the restaurant can be found at biancas.net. And a big thanks to the restaurant for supporting their trip. And in closing out this final segment of the Cross Canada Trike Tour, here once again is Sunisha Gergich reflecting on his entire trip. Sunisha acknowledges that through promoting Deconstructing Dinner along the way, he now has a wealth of new knowledge to take home with him and apply to his daily life.
Yeah, it's just somewhat starting to sink in slowly. I think I'm still kind of in shock that we actually managed to do it. I mean, I had no doubt the whole time that we will, but the way it played out, it was well beyond anything that I expected originally. The whole experience, just the biking, the scenery, the people, promoting your show and talking with people about the food issues all the way across Canada. I mean, I've learned a great deal, and I really can't wait to go home and start applying that in my own life more than I have been, and using those great ideas that we heard all the way across, and maybe even spreading some of those in local community in through London where I am. So I know I will definitely have my work cut out in front of me, and just searching out kind of what's available around London food-wise, what is local, and looking into my habits and improving on those as well.
And that was Sunisha Gergich speaking to me over the phone from St. John's, Newfoundland. And don't forget to check out more information on his and Derek's trip across the country by visiting our website at deconstructingdinner.ca. and linking to the Cross Canada Trike Tour page from the main page of the site.
So today, Dad, I sold the old John Deere.
Deconstructing Dinner has long incorporated music into many of our episodes, from Phil Vernon's tunes about Percy Schmeiser or biotechnology and Terminator seeds to Terry Winchell's pesticide song and Todd Butler's Farmer Dan. There's clearly no shortage of tunes out there that help add to our weekly content. But in this next segment, we will meet with one musician who has long been writing pieces about farming and rural life in southern Ontario, and that is well-known bluegrass performer Fred Eaglesmith. His song John Deere has been played here on the show before, and I finally had the opportunity to sit down with Fred in person and learn more about his personal history with farming and what inspires some of the heartfelt content making its way into his songs. A few tunes in particular do a great job at capturing the many crises facing Canadian farmers today. And while farmers did once flock to hear Fred perform, the messages in his music are unfortunately confirmed by those who attend his shows today. To use a title of one of Fred's songs, Things is changing, as he points out, because farmers are no longer in regular attendance at his shows, because there are hardly any farmers left.
Not the same anymore, things is changing. Not the way they was before when the wind would blow.
Hailing from Port Dover, Ontario, the Juno Award winner has been compared to such icons as Woody Guthrie and Bruce Springsteen, and is the only Canadian musician to have ever held a number one spot on the bluegrass charts in the United States. His intensive touring schedule has earned him a cult of followers who are known as Fredheads.
Pray for rain,
sit on the porch and watch it fall, but it doesn't really matter to anybody anymore. You buy your bread at the bakery.
Fred joined me in the studios of Kootenai Co-op Radio while on tour here in Nelson, B.C.
I was born and raised on a farm, on a chicken farm. We had between 30 and 60,000 chickens when I was a kid, and we lost the farm. And that was when I was very young, and then we moved to a mixed dairy farm, and so I lived on a mixed dairy farm until I was about 15, 16, and that started to go south.
Put up yesterday, and when we saw it, we all ran out just to see what it had to say. And when we read it, our eyes filled with tears and they fell to the cold hard clay. Something about a mortgage, something about foreclosure, something about failing to pay.
After leaving home and taking up a passion in music, Fred Eaglesmith released his first album at the age of 22 in 1980, and then returned home to begin farming on his own.
Then I left home for a long time, and I came back in my late teens, early 20s, and I started to farm on rented farms myself, just figuring out what I could do. And then I bought a farm in the early 80s, just a small 20-acre farm. And again, a lot of it was just experimenting. Raised mostly buckwheat and raised some cattle and some hogs.
Fred continued with his farming experiments until only a couple of years ago when he gave up on farming and passed the farm onto his kids.
Then I went into horticulture a little bit, and then I took the whole thing off the grid for 7 years. That was sort of the focus of it. I built a little hydro plant, and I built a wind plant and a little solar thing, and I ran it like that for 7 years. And then I moved off that farm when my wife and I split, and then we just gave it to our kids about 2-3 years ago.
I got a half a jug of water in an old hand crank machine. I got a half a jug of water in an old hand crank machine. And this sandy soil grows the best darn crops.
Fred's part-time career as a musician was not so different than many Canadian farmers today who struggle so much with staying afloat that they're pushed into taking on second or even third jobs in order to remain in the business of farming. Alongside the writing and performing of his music, Fred discovered that buying and selling products is more lucrative than growing them.
Yeah, I was playing music in between, and you know, with farming, if you don't do sales when you're farming, you can't farm. So I was always working on sales. I was working on my music, and I was working on the farm. Eventually, the sales took over on the farm. It happens to farmers, and it happened to me. I got caught in this trap where I could make more money buying and selling products than I could actually raise them. And I was 23 years old, and I started this business to support my music. And 5 years later, it was a $6 million a year business, and I had 28 people working for me, and I hated my life. But that's what sort of circumvented the farming. Was I just wanted to have this little cool farm, raise a couple cows, you know, just do the thing, live off the land sort of. And it just took off. And next thing you know, I got a 15,000 square foot building 20 miles away, and it caught me up. And that's a real bad thing that happens to farmers all the time.
The song that pushed Fred Eaglesmith to the top of the bluegrass charts in the United States was entitled 30 Years of Farming.
I wrote this song called 30 Years of Farming, which is a bluegrass song. It was only number one bluegrass song in America ever by a Canadian.
And when we read it, our eyes filled with tears and they fell to the cold hard clay. Something about a mortgage, something about foreclosure, something about failing to pay. Oh, and on the post by the general store, they put up a little sign. An auction sale day after tomorrow at the end of the Lincoln Line. 30 years of farming, 30 years of heartache, 30 years of day to day. Oh, my daddy stopped talking the day the farm was auctioned. There was nothing left to say. Oh, my mama's tears fell freely down as she walked amongst the flowers in the yard.
and every number. The auctioneer called is like a blow to her precious heart. And every number, the auctioneer called, man, another thing was sold that day. Till everything was auctioned, and we stood there watching as they loaded it and drove it away. Oh, and on the post by the general store, they put up a little sign, an auction sale day after tomorrow at the end of the Lincoln Line. 30 years of farming, 30 years of heartache, 30 years of day to day. Oh, my daddy stopped talking the day the farm was auctioned. There was nothing left to say. We awoke this morning, there was nothing for us to do. Nothing in the granary, no hay in the mow, no cattle, no tractor, no tools. So we loaded up the car, took the clothes that we wore, and a few things we managed to save. Mama read from the book, we took one last look, and then we drove away. Oh, and on the post by the general store, they put up a little sign, an auction sale day after tomorrow at the end of the Lincoln Line. 30 years of farming, 30 years of heartache, 30 years of day to day. Oh, my daddy stopped talking the day the farm was auctioned. There was nothing left to say. Oh, my daddy stopped talking the day the farm was auctioned. There was nothing left to say. Good night, everybody. Thank you so much.
Port Dover, Ontario's Fred Eaglesmith and his tune, 30 Years of Farming, which first appeared on his third album released in 1987, entitled Indiana Road. You're tuned in to Deconstructing Dinner and a brief showcase of Ontario musician Fred Eaglesmith. With a long history of farming, Fred's music can often be a captivating image of rural life in Canada. I sat down with Fred in our studios here in Nelson, BC to learn more about his thoughts on farming and the state of our food system. Fred has seen the demise of the family farm firsthand and has captured this in his music. Now, we don't often hear from many large-scale industrial farmers here on Deconstructing Dinner, and contrary to many of the farmers whom we've heard from here on the show, Fred Eaglesmith is a firm believer in large-scale farming, and he sees small-scale farming as simply a lifestyle choice and not a real business.
And it's really about the way I feel, because there's two kinds of farming. There's the corporate farm, of course, which feeds us, apparently, and there's the little farm. And the little farm... you know, that's a lifestyle. It's a lifestyle. It's not really a business. The bankers always said that to me. It's, you know, it's a business, not a lifestyle. And you know, it's a lifestyle. So there's two kinds of farming. There's lifestyle farming and business farming. Some guys manage to cross the line and make it work, but it's very difficult.
Like many back to the landers and people looking to explore alternatives to industrial farming, Fred Eaglesmith did too dabble in the romantic image of what a farm could look like. But as he sees it, it was both this alternative approach to farming and the unrealistic demands from consumers for perfect-looking food that led to the demise of the conventional Canadian farm.
There's a real, you know, and I had it too. I had the bug of romanticism, you know, and there's a whole romantic interest in farms, especially from fringe society. You know, fringe has a nice idea of how farming should be. The whole hemp scandal was the greatest mockery of farming that ever existed, you know. So we could just grow this thing that grew hundreds of years ago, and we're all going to make this work, and we're going to pay a mortgage to buy a pair of pants. And all this stuff, what people think the alternative crowd is going to help the farms. And really, it hurts it all the time. They drive 40 miles to get a cup of fair trade coffee and think that that makes sense. You know, my mother used to say this wonderful thing. She used to say there's fast food, there's junk food, and there's health food, and then there's prayed for food. And prayed for food is will always be healthy. And, you know, this sort of what really really did hurt the farm a lot was all these people moving out to the country and raising our taxes. And, you know, when I left our farm, there was just houses all around us. You couldn't touch a neighbor within a mile when we first moved there. And it's all this sort of just a little bit of interest. I'm just going to dabble in this. And if it doesn't work, I'm just going to go back to town. This has really hurt agriculture a lot, but serious agriculturalists can't do it.
Can't get a job. Couldn't buy a job to save your life, so you go down to some kitchen just like 1935. You got a couple of children and a tear-stained wife, and you ain't trying to get ahead, you're just trying to get by.
You know, it was ground zero. It was so hard, and it was just clay and terrible land and everything. But these people all moved out. And, you know, when people move out from the city, a lot of times it's because they've got problems in the city. You know, so it's buddy's got an alcohol problem, or buddy's got this problem or that problem. The marriage isn't working out. Let's move to the country and it'll work out. All of a sudden we're getting calls. Will you please send the police? My mother just got knocked out by my father. We didn't know about this. You know, we only went to church twice on Sunday, and that was as far as we ever went. We just worked lived on the farm, and all of a sudden it was brought to us, you know, nobody protected us, but they didn't care. I really think it was, I totally think the whole thing, and I'm not a conspiracist, but I think it was meant they wanted this. Farming is so uncool. Real farming, pretend farming is really cool, but real farming is really uncool. You're up to your knees in manure every day. It's not fun. It's not good. And I really think it was the Trudeau government that started it. They went, we don't want this. We want to be a cool country. We're not going to be a farming country. We're cool. You know, Trudeau was hip and cool, and I loved them and all that. But, you know, it went from the second largest employer in Canada to number 7 during the Trudeau years. They wanted it gone. You know, they wanted us to be wholesalers. And that's what we are now. Now we're purchasers, aren't we? We're importers.
On the table, unopened, he already knows what it says. He's known it for years. Still his hand shook with fear when he picked it up in town yesterday. It ain't like it seems. You can run a farm on dreams. Still he thought might let him carry on. Carry on till the dream was even gone. And he'd go out and plow, but the tractor's broken down, and the day is almost spent anyway. He pours himself a drink, sits on the porch to think, whatever are the neighbors gonna say. Drinking don't take the place the banker does with an empty face. He tells you about a job up the road, and leave the keys in the mailbox. There's a patch on the north side. It's early and it's dry. It's probably the best there is around. But when they sell it off, they won't even bring it up. Hell, who cares anymore about the ground? Some sour-faced city kid's lawyer puts in the bed for a rundown, tax-sheltered hobby farm.
blame anybody anymore. And he'd go out and plow, but the tractor's broken down, and the day's almost spent anyway. He pours himself a drink, sits on the porch to think, whatever are the neighbors gonna say? Drinking don't take the place the banker does with an empty face. He tells you about a job off the road, and leave the keys in the mailbox when you go.
But we were just farmers, and they should have just left us to be farmers. In Europe, you're just a farmer, they protect you. You're God's gift to the world. And every freak that came out and flashed my dad a peace sign, you know, if he had known what the finger was, he would have given it back to him and said, go back to where you come from. We have work to do here. You know what I mean? Go, you know, it was like, I just think that we were invaded. The whole thing was invaded by coolness. And, you know, everybody started importing food. We had to have that fresh green pepper. We had to have no spots on our apples. We knew this. With this, you know, my father loved chemicals. He sprayed them all over. We're going, Dad, this is insane. My father thought DDT was straight from Christ himself. You know, he thought this was a blessing. We're going, you know, because these people wanted this. Okay, we'll deliver this. We'll do this because these people wanted it. Responding to the demands, and the demands were and are still so unrealistic. You know, all these people who are so into agriculture, why aren't they going down to the farmer down the road and saying, look, I'll give you $500 a year, you grow my food. You know, if they're really into it, that's what they do. They say, you know what, that guy down the road, that's what they do in Europe. They support their agriculture, but it's all talk here. It's all talk.
God bless this house, the kitchen says, and even when the bills aren't paid, be thankful for the things that you have, even just the shirt on your back.
They're not the same anymore, things is changing. Not the way they was before when a wind would blow. And there was bound to be a storm. Now it's blowing in all directions. And only one thing's for sure, things is changing. Pray for rain. Sit on the porch and watch it fall, but it doesn't really matter to anybody anymore. You buy your bread at the bakery and your beer at the liquor store, and the preacher screams from the TV screen, believe in the Lord, things is changing. Is changing. Can't get a job. Couldn't buy a job to save your life, so you go down to some kitchen just like 1935. You got a couple of children and a tear-stained wife, and you ain't trying to get ahead. Trying to get back.
Fred Eaglesmith in his 1993 release Things Is Changin', out on the album of the same name. And just before that was his tune Go Out and Plow, released in 1991 on the album There Ain't No Easy Road. And you're tuned in to Deconstructing Dinner in a feature segment on Ontario musician Fred Eaglesmith. We featured Fred's music here on the show before because, as someone with such an extensive history in farming, his lyrics have long been about many of the issues covered here on the show each week. I spoke with Fred Eaglesmith while he was on tour in Nelson, BC. One of Fred's most interesting responses to my questions was on the topic of his fans. I had expected that many of his fans would indeed be farmers who can connect and relate to the messages in Fred's music. But according to Fred, that was once the case, but not anymore. They're just simply aren't enough farmers left.
Not anymore. I used to all the time when in the 80s when farming was really tough, but they all lost their farms in the 90s. There is no more. Also, it used to be only farmers came to my shows and sometimes in rural towns. And now it's like my grandfather had a farm, or I used to farm. People say I used to farm, but nobody wants to talk about it. They shrug and just go, how did this happen? I'm a real estate agent now. So I don't really meet him like I did in the 80s and the early 90s.
And here's Fred Eaglesmith, recorded live in our studios at Kootenai Co-op Radio.
This letter that I write to you, Dad, well, I will not sign my name. Though I did not want to tell you, I felt I had to anyway. It's rained for weeks and it flooded the creek and I lost a whole crop of grain. And the man at the bank wouldn't loan me the money. Went that field again. So today, Dad, sold the old John Deere. The man who bought it's gonna fix it up and put it in a museum. Well, I guess that's where this whole thing's gone. A picture for people to pay to look upon. That's how they lived in the old days, son. Sheep's in the meadow, can't find the cows. Little boy blue's got a job in town. Yesterday, old McAllister came by and said that he's had enough. Between the government and the subsidies, well, he just couldn't keep up. And if welfare checks was farming, well, he'd simply just rather not. And I didn't say nothing, Dad, as I watched him drive off. But today, Dad, I sold the old John Deere. The man who bought it's gonna fix it up and put it in a museum. Well, I guess that's where this whole thing's gone. Picture for people to pay to look upon. That's how they lived in the old days, son. Sheep's in the meadow, can't find the cows. Little boy blue's got a job in town. It's a true song. Every word in it is true. It was exactly, I wrote this letter to my dad saying I got this tractor from you. I inherited, sort of. When he left his farm, he gave me the tractor and I had to sell it. And so that song's just, and there was a McAllister, all those people in that, and Mary got a job at town, and yeah, the song is almost word for word true.
Mary says it'll be okay if nothing else goes wrong. And she got a job at the Five and Dime, and the hours ain't too long. I hope this letter finds you well. I'm sorry how it just goes on. But I had to tell somebody, Dad, and you were the only one. And today, Dad, I sold the old John Deere.
Fred Eaglesmith performing his tune, John Deere, live in the studios of Kootenai Co-op Radio in July 2008. John Deere was first released in 2001 on the album Ralph's Last Show. And you can learn more about this Juno Award winner from Port Dover, Ontario, by visiting his website at fredeaglesmith.com. I spoke with Fred while he was here in Nelson, BC, on tour promoting his new album, Tinderbox. In taking us to the end of today's episode of Deconstructing Dinner, I do have here an audio segment from an interesting film we came across that nicely ties in with the content of that recent or that last segment with Fred Eaglesmith. The film is titled People and the Land, Farming and Agriculture, and was produced in the 1980s as an examination of the farm crisis that Fred was speaking of. And the film sends a message that the way out of the crisis is to not view the land and people as resources to be consumed, but as part of a spiritual whole. This is just going to be a 10-minute segment of a 55-minute-long film. This film was produced by Wade Britzius and Marilyn Klinkner of Whitehall, Wisconsin, and is now being made available through Deep Dish TV out of New York City. And it's
us farmers, we're not wanting to get bigger. The government's driving us to be bigger farmers is what it is.
So the question isn't whether there's going to be enough food. The question is a social question of what kind of society we want.
And I told that FDIC man, hey, I want you to know that I liberated a manure spreader. And I'm giving it sanctuary at St. Anne's. And if you all want it, you all are going to have to come and get it.
The crisis in agriculture shouldn't just be seen as a crisis in agriculture, but it's actually a crisis in our culture at large.
Every 8 minutes, a family farm is lost in the United States. The U.S. Office of Technology Assessment says that if present trends continue, by the year 2000, most of our food will be produced by 55,000 huge factory farms instead of the 650,000 smaller farms still operating today. In spite of farm subsidies and rhetoric that the crisis is over, the trend continues, with efficiency in business being the catchwords of the day. In the following program, we will see responses to this situation through the eyes of media producers nationwide working at the grassroots level. As we move closer to understanding the concerns of farmers, we will see how their concerns are related to those of Native Americans, migrant workers, and to all of us who consume the food, drink the water, and breathe the air on this planet. If we are ignorant about farmers, we remain ignorant about land, about hunger, and about the source of our very existence.
My parents moved here in 1950. I grew up here, graduated in 1972, went into partnership with my father in 75. From there, we made numerous improvements, added on to the barn so it would support two families. So we built a heifer barn. We converted an old heifer barn down below the road into a granary, put up a butler bin for grain storage. We were doing well for up until about like 1982. And at this point from now on, it's every day's a financial struggle. Every morning when you get up, you wonder if you should continue on or not, or whether it's even worth it or not. I've got three kids, and I'm not about to encourage them to go into farming.
Despite heavy investment and hard work, farmers fight to continue, sometimes protesting government and market policies that favor large producers.
We're losing a great deal of farmers in New York, and I know it's the same way here in Vermont. And apparently the politicians would rather listen to each other than listen to the farmers.
So is the story in New York pretty much the way it is in Vermont, that I don't know, it's...
Within 20 miles of my farm, we've lost about 1,500 cows in the last 2 years. That would translate into the loss in the economy of probably somewhere between $2.5 and $3 million being brought into the area.
Like Larry said, the whole point is that we're not getting our cost of production back. When you don't have a cost of production, you're losing money. And most of us who are good managers, although we weren't given our farms and whatnot, we're excellent managers. And the point is that we can't operate at a loss forever. And we need more money now because we're not even meeting our cost of production. And like Larry said, the contingent that's here today, eight of us, see, we're usually portrayed as farmers that are losing their farms from FHA, and we're portrayed as the bottom of the heap, but we're not. We're all good managers. I think the average herd average of amongst the fellows that are here today is somewhere around 20,000 pounds, which is, in the top higher echelon of the dairy industry. And so we're just saying, not that that makes any difference, but the point is we feel that we're managing our farms well. We've got our families working on the farms. That's why we came here today. This is the first day most of us have taken off in 2 or 3 years just to come here to this hearing. And we've got to be home tonight to milk 200 miles away. So that's how the way we operate, you see.
In Iowa, a whole farm community goes beyond mere protest to civil disobedience. They resist the foreclosure sale of one of the best-run farms in Harlan County.
I don't know why I'm up here to start this off. I happen to be the baby daughter. But any of you that were in church this morning and saw that mass going on, that was a funeral mass, people. And the death was that of the family farm.
We are victims of a policy
a deliberate policy that is designed to take family-type farmers out. And they even told us how to do it. They said we've got to lower prices and force these resources, and they call us resources, make it the economic incentive so that they won't stay in agriculture anymore. And we've had Secretary of Agriculture like Earl Butz who says there's too many farmers. Many of them should move to town and do something useful.
Yeah.
And one of his assistants, he said, a few farmers going broke each year is one of the most healthy things there is.
As far as producing food, we can produce food any way we want. We can produce food with large corporate farms. We can produce food with widespread family farms. So the question isn't whether there's going to be enough food. The question is a social question of what kind of society we want.
Folks on my right, there are 19 of them, are going to put their bodies between the sheriff and the sale in a civil and peaceful way. The statement for them is their bodies. And the sheriff will proceed to arrest each one of them and take them into the courthouse at 10 o'clock. And then he will come down here amongst us and attempt to sale Dominic and Ida Faye Lichtai's farm. At which point, we will make so much noise.
When rural people are driven from the land, a way of life is left behind. A growing body of land is being taken over by corporate farmers, absentee landlords, insurance and other investment companies who control the land's resources as they see fit. Only 25% of the farms produce 80% of farm products. In the words of Wendell Berry, author and farmer,
the question of the survival of the family farm and the farm family is one version of the question of who will own the country, which is, ultimately, the question of who will own the people.
And that was this week's edition of Deconstructing Dinner, produced and recorded at Nelson, British Columbia's Kootenai Co-op Radio. I've been your host, John Steinman. I thank my technical assistant, John Ryan. The theme music for Deconstructing Dinner is courtesy of Nelson area resident Adam Shake, and this radio program is provided free of charge to campus community radio stations across the country and relies on the financial support from you, the listener. Support for the program can be donated through our website at deconstructingdinner.ca or by dialing 250-352-9600.